Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, April 27th, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Our show will be devoted tonight mainly to news from the VA about this ongoing coronavirus pandemic and exactly what the VA is doing and what the VA wants veterans and their families to know about it. And after that, we'll have some other news and information of interest. First, let's say hello to Richard Hurley. How are you, Richard?
Hey, David. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the show. I hope you're all coping well despite the ongoing crisis due to coronavirus. It's a time when many people, as well as many veterans groups, are reaching out to those, help those in need. Quite frankly, that's the kind of positive attitude that we need more of. Tonight, as everybody knows, this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments, and questions regarding anything you may have regarding the VA. Maybe you have claims pending in the VA or the Board of Veteran Appeals, or you have issues. I know I mentioned to the Camp Lejeune water contamination men and women on that Facebook site. That's about 16,000 of you out there, and you can give us a call, talk about your situation with Camp Lejeune. Our number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Well, as everyone knows, this coronavirus pandemic has really significantly affected everyone in the nation. Our hearts go out to those that have lost loved ones and friends to this illness, this disease. Unfortunately, it's not over yet. Although some states, as the news is reporting today, some states are starting to reopen, allow businesses to reopen. That's not the case in many places, including here in West Central Florida. But hopefully we're getting closer to that time. But meanwhile, it's still a big issue. It's affecting everyone. And don't know exactly when it will finally end. Meanwhile, the VA is continuing to put out information, and we want to dedicate the first part of today's show to the latest from the VA on the coronavirus and its effect on the VA and veterans and their families. So the first item I have is from the VA, a press release just from this past Friday, April 24th, where the VA has announced that it has significantly increased its hiring in the first 2 weeks of April. This was a hiring surge that the VA says it will continue in the coming weeks as the VA works to protect patients from this coronavirus pandemic. During the time frame of March the 29th to April the 11th, the VA hired 3,183 new staff members, of which 981 are registered nurses, which is a 37.7% increase from the prior two-week period. So that's quite a significant increase. And just as a side note, I found that interesting, Rick, that, you know, we've talked in prior shows really about the ongoing shortage that the VA always says it has as far as medical personnel, sometimes in the order of kind of a standing number of 35,000 to 40,000.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I remember the one was like 37,000.
Yeah, most of which were on the healthcare side, the Veteran Health Administration, as opposed to the Veteran Benefit Administration. But you know, it's not the VA's exclusive problem in finding nurses and doctors and psychiatrists, psychologists to hire. There's nationwide shortages. Some parts of the country more than others, but I thought it was remarkable that in about a two-week time frame, they were able to hire almost 3,200 people, of which almost 1,000 were registered nurses. Now, VA Secretary Robert Wilkie was quoted in this press release as saying, quote, as VA proactively bolsters its workforce, the department expects to hire another 4,500 staff members during the next several weeks. Caring for veterans requires dedicated staff. On behalf of the veterans we are charged with serving, I salute those who have recently joined the VA team so we can continue serving veterans during this national emergency, unquote. Now, the VA said that it has moved aggressively to ensure that each of its 170 hospitals and more than 1,200 clinics across the country are staffed to handle the increasing flow of patients due to this COVID-19. This effort protects both veterans and non-veteran patients that the VA treats. And I'll mention in another news item shortly, the VA has been treating non-veteran patients as part of its, what it calls its fourth mission, serving as a medical backstop during a national health crisis such as what we're experiencing. The VA has launched a national hiring campaign to hire registered nurses, respiratory therapists, anesthesiologists, housekeepers, supply technicians, and other medical and related professionals to work in its facilities across the country. So if you're interested in really any job in the VA healthcare administration, whether you're a nurse, a doctor, respiratory therapist, housekeeper, supply technician, anesthesiologist, whatever your expertise would be, go to the website vacareers.va.gov. Again, the website, if you're interested or if you have someone that you know that you'd like to pass on information about perhaps getting hired by the VA, the health administration, go to the website vacareers, that's vacareers.va.gov, for vacareers.va.gov, and you can learn more about how you can join, what the application process is, et cetera. All right, before I turn things over to Richard Hurley, another press release, this one actually from April 14th, where the VA announced its so-called fourth mission actions to help all Americans, not just veterans, during the COVID-19 outbreak. As VA Secretary Robert Wilkie said, and I quote, VA is committed to helping the nation in this effort to combat COVID-19. Helping veterans is our first mission, but in many locations across the country, we're helping states and local communities. VA is in this fight not only for the millions of veterans we serve each day, we're in the fight for the people of the United States. Now, the VA traditionally provides veterans health care benefits and memorial affairs, but in times of national crisis, such as the current coronavirus pandemic, the VA provides services to the nation based on requests from states while being clear that veterans are served primarily. Helping non-veterans is known as the VA's fourth mission. The VA has determined to make 1,500 beds available for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. These beds will be a combination of acute care and intensive care beds for non-veteran patients available at VA locations around the country. Some recent examples of the VA providing care for many non-veteran patients for COVID-19, pursuant to requests from FEMA and as part of the emergency response effort, that has included, for instance, and the VA New York Harbor location treating 80 patients. They had 30 discharges. Unfortunately, they had 5 deaths. The VA in New Jersey treating 24 patients. VA in Ann Arbor, Michigan treating 17. In Detroit, 10 patients, and in Albuquerque, New Mexico, treating 4 patients. The VA continues to accept mission assignments from FEMA to open beds for non-veteran patients after a determination is made that care to veterans will not be disrupted. And in the last few days, and this was as of a couple weeks ago, the VA had made 35 beds available to the community at 3 facilities in Illinois, the Edward Hines Jr. VA Hospital, the Marion VA Medical Center, and the Jesse Brown VA Medical Center. And it opened 18 beds at the Overton Brooks VA Medical Center in Louisiana. As we know from the news, Louisiana was an area of particularly high impact by the coronavirus. The VA is also caring for people in nursing homes who are especially vulnerable to COVID-19 due to age or pre-existing medical conditions. And and they've done so in facilities such as the VA facility in Providence, Rhode Island, Bedford, Massachusetts, as well as other states. And the states that require assistance from the VA should request it through their local Department of Health and Human Services Regional Emergency Coordinator. That's part of FEMA's National Response Coordination Center. Counties, cities, and other municipalities should route all requests for federal support through their respective state agencies. And the VA continues to encourage veterans, staff members, and their families to take precautions to protect against respiratory illnesses caused by COVID-19, the flu and the common cold, and to follow guidance of their local and state health care and emergency management facilities. So that's a wrap-up of some news. We also have a lot more details that might answer some of your questions, but before getting to those, let me go back over to Rick Hurley. Rick, what
Thanks,
are your
David.
Thoughts?
Well, let's talk a little bit about how COVID's affecting compensation claims. The VA has, in the last couple of weeks, few weeks, I guess, maybe a month, has initiated a new procedure. Many of you are getting CMP exams through the subcontractors, LHI, QTC, and these companies are calling you up and telling you that they want to do either a phone exam. That was one I heard just today. They're also willing to do a Skype exam, and these would be for psychological, PTSD, anxiety, depression, as well as physical, for knees and shoulders. And so I've been talking to a lot of vets over the last 2 weeks about this, and all of them have said that these LHI and QTC, when they call, they make it sound like this is the way it's going to be, and this is when we're going to schedule you. And I want to let you veterans know that that's not the way it's going to be. If you want, and I encourage you, if you want an in-person examination, you have a right to have that. And all you do is you tell LHI or QTC that that's what you want, and you're willing to wait until COVID calms down and things are a little more open. Because I don't know, you know, David, how the heck do you do a flexion exam for a knee by Skype or even by phone? But you do it yourself, you know?
I see your point there, yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, you know, what the bottom line is, these companies, you know, they get paid by volume. How many veterans that they get to see, and they can then bill the VA. So, you know, they just want to get these exams done. They don't care how they're done. They just want to get them done and move on, and, you know, so that they can continue to build the VA. So you veterans out there, you know, it's up to you, but I highly recommend that you tell these companies that you'll wait, and yes, it means that your case gets delayed even longer, but you know, I'd rather see veterans get a good and meaningful examination as opposed to one that basically doesn't do anything. We know what's going to happen. These companies are going to lowball or minimalize the extent of the disability, and you're going to be forced to go out and hire your own independent medical examiner or end up in the appeal process or something. So, you know, everyone needs to slow down a little bit when it comes to these CMP exams. And, you know, I'm getting these calls, like, David, I'm getting them. I had four today on the same point. And, you know, so I'm advising my clients to, you know, if they can wait, then please wait until they can maybe get in there in June or even July. But there's no hurry. I think it's very important that you have a good, meaningful medical CMP exam as opposed to something that's just thrown together. And then you fall. Then you let yourself get into. You become basically a slave to these LHI and QTC companies, because they're going to put down anything that they want in that form. And we know that over the years I've been doing this and the experience I have with it, it's not going to be that good. Even an in-person exam doesn't come out that good. So imagine one that's done either by the phone or by Skype. So when you get these phone calls and they're going to schedule you, and just don't be intimidated, because that's what they're going to try to do. They're going to try to intimidate you. Just tell them, no, you'll be happy to wait. And please call me back when things are a little bit, have calmed down a little bit. And as far as, and I've said this before, with regard to COVID and how it's affecting the Board of Veteran Appeals, unless you are doing a Skype interview or hearing at your lawyer's office or your representative's office, all BVA hearings have been postponed up until June 1st. And I spoke to someone at the BVA today and asked them, you know, we're slowly coming on to May 1st. So how do things look going into June now? You know, because normally I would start getting scheduling for June, and I was told today that they're now even kind of holding back. They're still kind of, they haven't given up on the June 1st date, but they're not quick. They're not too quick right now to start scheduling things for June and July for fear of having to postpone them even further. So. Yeah, you know, this COVID's really having a drastic effect on, a devastating effect on the VA compensation process. But that doesn't mean you give up. You know, that doesn't mean you don't keep pursuing your claim. You got to, as David and I say, you got to stay in the boat. You got to keep moving downstream, and everything will work out. Another thing I just wanted to mention, because this routinely comes up, you know, unless you're 100% permanent and total veteran, you are subject to a potential possible reduction through the VA. If they decide, you know, they feel you're getting better, the condition has improved, they may make an application and let you know that they're going to reduce your rating from 80 to 60 or 60 to 4, whatever the case might be. So I say that to you because, you know, that can happen. But if you have a claim, if you're at the 50 or 70% and someone says, you know, people are saying you should go for an increase. And David, you and I run into this all the time. And then the veteran says, well, I don't want to seek an increase because I'm worried that I may lose what I have. That should not be a reason for you not to pursue an increase in your condition if, in fact, your condition warrants an increase. The VA can come after you and reduce you for, you know, unless you're 100% permanent and total, the VA can reduce you anyway. So don't sit back and just, decide you're not going to pursue it, because of fear of losing what you have. Even with what you have, you can still lose that. So you gotta stay aggressive and keep pursuing your claims as, hopefully to get to the point where you are at 100% permanent and total. So just those are some practical situations going on with the VA. And I'll toss it back to you, David.
Thanks. Yeah, those are great points, Rick. And I would add to your point about the reduction risk that veterans face. You know, our strategy in the past has been to use those opportunities to actually go on the offensive for a veteran. There is due process rights that a veteran has, so the VA just cannot unilaterally reduce without a veteran's rating, without first giving them notice and an opportunity to respond and an opportunity for an in-person hearing. And now with the COVID-19, the regional offices are shut down. The employees are still working remotely, at least some of them are. But I suspect the VA is not going to be as quick in processing reductions right now because they won't. If a veteran asks for a hearing, they're not going to be able to hold those hearings. But by going on the offensive, what I meant was, I know, Rick, you know this, is that we use that as an opportunity not only to fight the VA's attempted reduction, if assuming the evidence is in favor of the veteran, but also using it as an opportunity to file new claims or supplemental claims for any disabilities to perhaps have worsened for the veteran. Not only that they have not improved, but they actually may have worsened, or the VA or the veteran may have developed some new secondary disabilities that had not yet been adjudicated. So it's an opportunity to try to use that event of the VA trying to reduce, actually turn the tables. And we've had some success in the past with that. The other thing related to the VA claims and appeals, we've mentioned this on the last couple shows, but I'll mention it again in case anyone missed it, is that as of earlier this month, April 3rd, the VA announced that it was providing extensions of time for veterans on any claims or appeals paperwork deadlines. One thing that the VA is usually pretty good at, usually, there are exceptions, is telling veterans in their letters when the next deadline is, whether it's to file a notice of disagreement, whether it's to provide additional information, what have you. And those deadlines, depending on what the step is, may vary, you know, might be 30 days in some cases, it might be up to a year in other cases. But the VA has just advised veterans, as of April 3rd, earlier this month, that that the VA is providing extensions of time for veterans that need to perfect a claim, meaning if they had submitted, let's say, an intent to file a claim, and then they were going to follow up with the actual claim, but also deadline to challenge an adverse decision, submit a notice of disagreement, submit a substantive appeal, or respond to a supplemental statement of the case. Some of those deadlines, as I say, are sometimes as short as 30 days. So what the VA says is that if you need an extension of time, you can simply submit your extension with any late file paperwork. You don't have to proactively request it in advance, which is probably just as well, because knowing the VA probably wouldn't respond in a timely manner. So the point is, when you do submit your information that's past the deadline, make sure at that point that you raise the red flag and you say, this is late because of the VA's already blanket approval for extensions of time because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Related to that, the VA also said that they'll accept typed or digital signatures instead of signatures signed in ink on forms, which is a useful thing to know. If you have any questions, you can call the VA at their toll-free number, which is 800-827-1000. And even though the regional offices are closed, they're still staffing that toll-free customer service number, which, again, is 1-800-827-1000. Now, word of caution, and this is very important. In some cases, a veteran may have a denial by the Board of Veterans' Appeals. And along with that decision from the board, there is a standard form that advises the veteran of subsequent rights. One of those is to appeal outside of the VA to the United States Court of Appeals for Veteran Claims. It's outside of the VA. And so the VA's recent press release from earlier this month approving sort of a blanket extension for VA matters does not extend to the court. So if you're faced with a 120-day deadline to file an appeal to the court and you're intending to appeal to the court, do not accept the VA's guidance as applying to the court, because it does not. And that's very important, because some deadlines, like the appeal to the court, are going to be showstoppers. You don't want to have to be in some situation of being a rare exception trying to see if the court will somehow allow your case to go forward. Just avoid that problem. File on time. But if you have any questions about that, give us a call, but also go to the VA website, va.gov. There's a lot more we can talk about on this issue and other issues, but let me go back over to Rick Hurley.
Yeah, I just got a text from one of the Camp Lejeune water contamination veterans from he's on that site I was talking about earlier. And first, I want to thank him for his text. And he basically was asking if I had any updated information on what's going on with the Camp Lejeune water contamination cases. As you know, these cases have been streamlined out of Louisville, Kentucky. All of the cases are being heard up there and are being handled out of that office. And quite frankly, I think it's been kind of slow moving, because I have a number of Camp Lejeune cases, and it seems like it's been kind of slowing down. They're not moving things as quickly as I would think they should be, considering, you know, some of the regular cases that I have around the country and in Florida. So that doesn't mean you don't keep filing your claims. I'm just saying, at this point, for whatever reason, it seems like the office up there is either they're inundated with claims and they're not getting to all of them. I'm just not sure, but it seems to me that the Camp Lejeune cases have been slowing down. So just wanted to shoot that out to that Marine who's got a Camp Lejeune case. Back to you, David.
Well, thanks. Now, there's other questions that veterans may have about, you know, what the effect of the COVID-19 is on VA, particularly on the healthcare side. And the VA has put out a lot of frequently asked questions that I thought I might highlight. One thing that has been clear is that this COVID-19, the shutdown, has been an event that has put more focus, more demand on technology. Rick, you mentioned earlier about how these contracted C&P companies, LHI and the other ones that were using even Skype. Well, the VA, even before this COVID-19, had been using telehealth, including video conferencing for some medical appointments, also telephone appointments when necessary. But this COVID-19 shutdown, which has affected, you know, shutting down a lot of the clinics and having the VA hospitals kind of scale back, trying to encourage veterans to call in first rather than just show up so they could be screened as far as their symptoms to see if they needed to go to the emergency room versus staying at home. But the VA's technology is another thing that they're emphasizing. And that includes the VA has this automated text messaging app where you can get health information and reminders sent to your cell phone. It's called Annie, A-N-N-I-E. And like I say, these messages that you can sign up for will send you updates. You can subscribe to that or get the app. Go to va.gov, and on the homepage, look for the information about COVID-19. And within that, they have links on how you can sign up for this Annie messaging, automated text messaging app. as I say, this program, as it pertains to the coronavirus precautions, will include messages to help you monitor what the virus symptoms might be and know at what point you should contact a VA care team or a nurse triage line for additional care. It'll also provide messages with general wellness tips and education on precautions you can take to prevent contracting this coronavirus. Now, some veterans have asked, can they get tested for COVID-19? And anyone that's been following the national news, any of the media, will know that relative limitations in availability of testing has been a controversial matter and a problem in the last couple months. The VA's answer to that question, if you ask, can I be tested by the VA for COVID-19? Their answer is that the VA, their health facilities, are testing veterans who meet the testing criteria provided by Centers for Disease Control, CDC. There's no charge for testing, but in other words, it's not something that the veterans can just show up and demand to be tested for that. The VA makes testing decisions based on many factors, including the severity of symptoms, if there are symptoms, other existing illnesses or conditions the veteran may have, any possible exposure to other people known to have contracted COVID-19, and other criteria. Again, the VA says that they're following the CDC testing criteria. On a related note, what should you do if you have an upcoming VA health appointment? As I said earlier, the VA has been steering veterans towards telehealth, which is either by phone or video. So for routine appointments, the VA is recommending using telehealth for your scheduled appointment. You can also cancel and reschedule your appointment for a later time, hoping that perhaps this this COVID-19 lockdown may have passed. If you have a non-urgent elective procedure scheduled, the VA will probably contact you to either cancel or reschedule for a later date. However, if they're urgent or emergent procedures, those should continue as scheduled. Now, if you want to change your in-person appointment to a telehealth visit, you can do that if you've signed up for the website My Healthy Vet. You can send a secure message through that website. You can also request a telehealth appointment online. Once your provider schedules a telehealth appointment, then you will receive a VA Video Connect link or some other approved video meeting tool to do that. And I think that VA Video Connect link is similar, Rick, to what you described that's being used, at least similar to what you're describing for the BVA video conference hearings done in lawyers or representative offices. It works very similar to that. Now, veterans may also wonder, well, what happens if the veteran has a community care appointment, meaning community care meaning a non-VA provider? The VA's guidance is, if you have a scheduled appointment with a community care, a non-VA provider, please contact them directly before going to the appointment. Some community care providers may be affected by closures, limited services, quarantining, or physical distancing based on CDC and local health department guidelines, which may vary around the country. If your appointment is canceled, try to work with your community care provider to reschedule that. The VA is extending VA authorizations for community care referrals, so you can continue to work with your community care provider to meet your appointment needs. If you have concerns about rescheduling your community care appointment, then send a secure message to your VA provider through the My Healthy Vet website, or call the VA if necessary. These are just some of the questions, but before I continue with some of these frequently asked questions, let me go back over to Rick Hurley. Rick, any thoughts?
No, it's just another, on the health side, it just seems like the VA does try to come up with ways to help our veterans. I've always felt, especially at the clinic level, I've always felt the VA does a pretty good job. It's evident by just these new hirings that David, you talked about earlier, and now another way of, staying up with the technology and so that our men and women can get in there for the health needs that they have.
Yeah, my observations, both personally and talking with some veterans are very pleased with, in general, yes, there are always exceptions and there's the occasional even malpractice, but for the most part, the VA has really, even before this COVID-19, been embracing the use of technology, this telehealth, when possible and within, the accepted standard of care. They'll use phone or video appointments. But the VA health side, unlike historically or the VA benefits side, the VA health side has been far more proactive and redundant in their communications. For example, if you have an appointment, not only will you get a telephone reminder, but if you've signed up to get text messages, you'll get a text message reminder that you then have to reply saying, yes, confirm, or no, I want to change it. And then you'll get a postcard in the mail. So you really almost have to go out of your way to forget that you have a VA appointment, because they really take it seriously. They realize and they remind veterans that if a veteran misses, is a no-show to an appointment, that's just hurting other veterans, because they blocked that space out for that particular patient. And if he or she fails to show up, then it's too late for them to get someone in there. It's a waste of time, and it's a waste of the provider's time and resources. So the VA communicates on the health side, I think, very, very effectively. That doesn't mean it's a perfect system. I know over the years, you know, the 2014 Phoenix VA hospital scandal was an example that sometimes serious problems do occur in scheduling, long delays, and even the VA playing with statistics to make it look like their care is more prompt than it actually is. But I think a lot has been done in the last 5 to 6 years to improve things, and I've seen that improvement. I think a lot of veterans that I talk to are happy with that.
Especially now, if a veteran is, and I've seen this with my own cases, the veteran is now gets rated at 100%. I've had veterans tell me, you know, prior to getting that rating, that they were, you know, they weren't 100% happy with the care that they were getting at the VA. And then all of a sudden, when they get that 100% rating, they call me and say, the VA won't leave me alone. I'm like, what do you mean they won't leave you alone? They're calling me in. They want me to come in to get my blood checked. They want me to come in and do this. They want me to come in and do this. And I'm like, well, that's good. And they're like, well, yeah, but prior to me getting 100%, you know, they weren't doing, they weren't really, you know, on top of their game. But now they're like, they won't leave me alone. So, you know, that's another reason veterans, you know, pursue your, on the benefit side, get your claim up to 100%, because apparently there's even more action for you once you get up there, and because they really want to take care of you. You know, you're now 100% disabled, permanent and total. So they realize, you know, they gotta extend themselves. So that's just another observation I've had.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think a lot of veterans would tell you, even if they're not at 100%, that the VA does a pretty fine job in coordination of care. Meaning, you may have a primary care provider that typically would be able to communicate very well, very fast, very effectively with other specialists that you may need to see, and to follow up with proper tests, and then getting back to you promptly with the test results. So it makes it a lot easier for the patient, rather than forcing the patient, as some experience in the private sector, of having to then be their own care coordinator and their own more aggressive patient advocate to make sure that there's communication between the primary doctor and all the specialists. But in any event, here's another question that some veterans may have as far as VA care and community care. Again, community care being non-VA provided. The question is, can a veteran get a referral to see a community care provider if he or she can't be seen at the VA during this pandemic time? Well, the VA's answer to that is, during this coronavirus pandemic period, the VA is continuing to make community care referrals when needed. Because of COVID-19, they're currently prioritizing referrals for urgent or other medically necessary care. That makes sense. And they note that some community care providers may be affected by closures, limited services, quarantining, or physical distancing based on CDC or local health department guidelines, which again vary across the country. The VA does emphasize that appointments to see community care providers need to be approved by the VA except for emergency or urgent care needs. So getting a referral depends on eligibility, the type of care, and many other factors. At this time, community care eligibility requirements haven't changed. And if you want more information about what those eligibility requirements are, go to va.gov. And on the homepage right now, they have a big link for the COVID-19 information. And just you'll find on that page a link for learning about eligibility for community care. So that's something to keep in mind. In other words, don't think that just because you can't see the VA, that the VA is automatically going to cover all your care in the private sector. They may or may not, but the answer is going to depend on a number of factors. And the best thing is, unless it's a true emergency or an urgent care situation, you need to get approval by the VA first, or you may find yourself owing significant medical bill for that. Another question that's arising for a lot of veterans, what should you do during this coronavirus time if you need to refill your prescription? That's an important one because, as many veterans know, the VA will often mail your medication to your address. Well, the VA's answer is, please request refills as soon as possible, but no later than 10 days before you run out of your current prescription. So you need to stay ahead, keep on top of how many pills you have left, and no later than 10 days before, contact the VA. Make sure the VA has your current mailing address on file. And if you need to, you can log on to the VA website to change your address online. If you currently get your prescription sent to you by mail, you'll continue to receive your refill request as normal. You'll need to actively request your refill in a number of ways, either online through the My Healthy Vet prescription refill and tracking tool, even through a mobile device with their new RX Refill mobile app. You can call in by telephone, and that number will be on your prescription label for your VA pharmacy's automated refill line. And then you can also request by mail, which is probably the slowest way to do that. But you have a number of options. Again, if you have questions about your VA medication prescriptions and refills, you can also send a secure message to your healthcare team through the My Healthy Vet website if you've logged in or created an account for that, or you can just call your local VA medical center. And again, there should be a phone number on your prescription label.
David, I just got a question from someone. What if I've been diagnosed with COVID-19 and need immediate action on my VA appeal? That's a great question. The Board of Veteran Appeals will offer you a priority review to move your appeal to the front of the line. This is called the Advanced on the Board of Veterans Appeals Docket, or AOD. Normally, that advanced docket would apply to someone who's homeless, someone who is dying, or someone who's 75 years or older. That's the standard. And so, if you've been diagnosed with COVID, then have your representative make an application to have your case expedited. Back to you, David.
That's a great point. Now, some veterans, because of the priority group that they're in for VA health care, they have to pay copays. It's not entirely free medical care. And the question that some veterans have is, will they still have to pay their VA copays during this pandemic period of time? The VA has announced that as of April 6th of this year, just earlier this month, the VA has stopped sending monthly copay billing statements to all veterans. Now, this means you won't receive a bill for any copays during this time. And the advice is, your next question might be, well, what happens when this pandemic period is deemed to be over? What happens then? Answer, I don't know yet. The VA's website is, please check back regularly for updates. So
I bet you anything they're going to take it off, because I have a guy who's 74 and he's going to be 75 on May the 2nd. So I was talking to the people at the BVA on Friday, and I brought this case up, and I said, he's going to be 75 on May the 2nd. Can we go ahead and put him on the advance docket? And the response was, well, on May the 2nd, send us the fax, and we'll put him on the advance docket.
I guess they want to make sure he's alive then, huh?
Unbelievable. It's like, Jesus, unbelievable. Hey, I got a question. Another question came in. Are the VA National Cemeteries open? That's a great question, because I just had a friend of mine whose mother just passed away, and we were talking about the arrangements for her. And yes, the VA National Cemeteries remain open, but for the safety of employees and visitors, they ask that the visitors follow physical distancing and travel restrictions based on CDC and local health department guidelines. Some cemeteries may be closed to the public. You should contact the cemetery for more information. On a personal note, I've seen situations where the cemetery is not letting more than four members of the family into the cemetery for the burial. In fact, you got to basically, there's a waiting list to get in because they don't want a lot of funeral cars going in and out of the cemetery. So you definitely need to work with the cemetery on that one. And another question I got here is, can I still schedule a burial at a national cemetery? Yes, you can. You can to schedule the interment, contact the National Cemetery Scheduling Office, and that number is 1-800-535-1117. The VA National Cemeteries remain open for the direct interment of veterans and eligible dependents. Immediate family members limited to 10 individuals of the deceased can witness the interment if requested and approved by the cemeteries. If you'd like to cancel or postpone an interment that's already scheduled, please contact the cemetery directly to cancel the service and to reschedule future services when ready. Hopefully we're not going to have too many of those that have to do that. But that's a tough one, David, that whole, when you lose a loved one and during this COVID and a lot of places, aren't able to, churches aren't able to have funerals for you. I mean, it's just horrific. So,
well, there is a caveat to that question you asked. Can I still schedule a burial at a national cemetery? The caveat is please wait till the veteran is deceased. I mean, that's probably a polite thing to do, but,
yeah.
Another question related to that is, can you schedule a committal service or a military funeral honors service? The VA's answer, not at this time. For the safety of volunteers, families, and staff, national cemeteries won't be conducting committal services or rendering military funeral honors until further notice. Families are welcome to proceed with the direct interment, which is what you were talking about, Rick. They could do the burial at this time and schedule committal service and military honors for some later date once normal operations resume, whenever that will be. So I hope some of these points have been important. And again, if you want more details or answers to other questions, go to va.gov, the website. And on that homepage there, they have a big headline for the COVID-19 information. A lot of the frequently asked questions are answered there. Why don't we have, a few minutes
left. I got some more news here, David.
Yeah.
As of March 12, 2020, U.S. Senator John Tester is leading more than 30 Senate colleagues in introducing the Fair Care for Vietnam Veterans Act of 2020. Yes, Vietnam vets, we are still litigating, and we're still pushing more bills through Congress. This would require the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to provide benefits for veterans suffering from four diseases associated with exposure to Agent Orange. Those are bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, Parkinson's, and hypertension. Currently, veterans with specific health conditions developed as a result of their exposure to Agent Orange during the Vietnam War are eligible for benefits and health care from the VA. However, the VA continues to deny coverage for approximately 190,000 veterans struggling with bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, Parkinson's, and hypertension. Four conditions specifically proven to have an association with exposure to toxic herbicide. Fair Care for Vietnam Veterans Act 2020 would add these illnesses to VA's list of service-connected presumptive conditions and provide essential benefits and care to Vietnam veterans. Veterans, I suggest, we're in an election year, and when you're out and you see these members of Congress campaigning to stay in Congress, or maybe someone who's seeking to become a member of Congress, bring this up. Bring up the Fair Care for Vietnam Veterans Act 2020 and ask them, what's going on. I doubt at this point with COVID-19 and everything else going on in D.C. that they're going to actually get to work on this, and it's going to pass this term. But that doesn't mean you can't still put the fire to some of these congressmen and women and ask them, what are you doing about this? What side of the fence do you stand? Of course, they're going to say we support it. But then ask them what they're doing about it. I mean, this is ridiculous, all these years later that we're still trying to completely get all of these medical conditions service-connected for you veterans, you Vietnam veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange. David, your thoughts?
That's a great issue. Yeah, that's the Fair Care for Vietnam Veterans Act of 2020. So I would just add to what you said, Rick, which is people ought to contact their members, the representatives in the House of Representatives. You have one, and then you have two U.S. senators for your state. Another thing that's very important is keep in mind that the initial work on all these bills is at the committee level. The House of Representatives has a Veterans Affairs Committee, and the Senate has a Veterans Affairs Committee. Go to their websites, which I'll give you in just a moment. Go to the websites and send a message through the website. It could not be simpler. It'll take you 5 minutes for each one or less. And the websites are veterans.senate.gov and veterans.house.gov. And on both of those websites, you'll see in the upper right-hand corner, there'll be a link for to contact the committee. And you can send a message. It'll just include your name and email address and phone number, then a message. And just tell them you want them to support, take action on, and move on the Fair Care for Vietnam Veterans Act of 2020. Now, there are a lot of other bills, proposed legislation, ideas out there. This is just one example. For example, you might want to send them a message about the open-air burn pit contamination issue. You may want to send them links about how to improve the GI Bill education benefits, whatever these other issues might be. And our guests, we've had several guests over the last couple months from major veteran organizations that have talked about their legislative goals and agendas. So there's quite a few. But again, the easy way, contact these committees, go to the websites, veterans.house.gov, veterans.senate.gov, and just send them a message. It's easier than sending an email even. You don't have to look anything up. Just send it right through the website. And that's your way to communicate directly. And while you're on those websites, veteran.senate.gov and veterans.house.gov, check out their links for their recent hearings, and you can read the legislative presentations of all the major and minor veteran organizations that submitted their legislative goal presentations from late February until about mid-March. We've talked about those on some prior shows, but we've just got a few minutes left. I want to make another pitch about two of our projects, our Costs of War project. Go to our website, stopwar.today. That's stopwar.today, and you can watch the video we released last June, which is an overview film on the costs of war and also how to promote peace. A lot of good resources on that website under the resources tab for stopwar.today. Anyone that wants a free copy of the book A Mighty Case Against War by author Kathy Beckwith, who spent 6 or 7 years researching and writing this truly outstanding book, you can get a free copy. Just send me an email. My email address, you still have your pen and paper, is lawcorey1@verizon.net. That's LAWCORY, the number 1, at verizon.net. And check out the resources. There's other videos and links, literally dozens of links that you may find of interest. So we're about out of time. Let's go over to you, Rick, and talk about our Coaching into Care program.
Yeah, as usual, at the end of each show, we like to promote Coaching into Care program. It's this program, I want to remind veterans and their families, it helps the veteran who are having difficulty transitioning to home life, and it helps them return home back into the civilian world. It helps them become independent. I know that sounds ridiculous, but you know, so many veterans that I've talked to over the years talk about how difficult it is to get back into that civilian world. Well, Coaching in the Care program helps you do that. And it helps the families help the veteran do that. And you can call that program at 1-888-823-7458. And it's open Monday through Fridays, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the Coaching in the Care program telephone number is 1-888-823-7458. I also want to remind listeners that if you know of someone who is in crisis or suicidal, you can call the Veterans Crisis Line. That number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. So once again, that number is 1-800-273-8255. Press 1. It's called the Veterans Crisis Line. Back to you, David.
Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. We hope you'll tune in next week. Our special guest next week will be Dolores D. Quaranta, who is the president and CFO of a veterans organization called Northeast Florida Women's Veterans, based in Jacksonville, Florida. Very impressive group. She'll be our guest next week. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Station 1. I'd like to thank our producer, Mr. Doug Newsom, and our sponsor, Corey and Hurley Law Group. I hope you'll tune in next week. Same time, same station, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain Time, 4 p.m. Pacific, bbsradio.com, Station 1. Hope you have a great week. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.